an autocratic adversary. This is not a country worth fighting for. This is not a leadership worth fighting for. It's a corrupt oligarchy. Everyone knows it's corrupt. Everyone was talking about how corrupt it is right up until they decided to make Zelensky a saint for a lot of reasons, including financial reasons for the West. So it's these mythical gains by Ukraine. I don't know what this gentleman is talking about, but Bakhmut is about to fall at the cost of probably 100,000 Ukrainians. And after that, it's up to Slavyansk, and we'll see what happens after that.
And the sad part is that the regular people just continue to die on both sides. I thank both of you for being with me out of New York, Andrei Dobryansky, Communications Director, Ukrainian Congress Committee of America, and Daniel McAdams, Executive Director, Ron Paul Institute, Lake Jackson, Texas. Thank you both. And thank you for being with us on Another Spotlight. I'm Marzia Hashemi, signing off for myself and all the crew right here in Tehran. Hope to see you right here next time.
This is the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran. This is the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran's broadcasting. The voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily via the internet address www.parstoday.com/en. You can also listen to the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird, Intelsat 902, and Eutelsat satellite, as well as via internet. You can also listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for more details. Here we enlighten you with ayahs 36 through 38 from the Surah Nahl, recited by Qasim Razi.
A'udhu billahi minash shaitanir rajim. Bismillahir rahmanir rahim. Wa laqad ba'athna fi kulli ummatin rasulan an i'budullaha wajtanibut-taghut. فَمِنْهُمْ مَنْ هَدَى اللَّهُ وَمِنْهُمْ مَنْ حَقَّتْ عَلَيْهِ الضَّلَالَةِ فَسِيرُوا فِي الْأَرْضِ فَانْظُرُوا كَيْفَ كَانَ عَاقِبَةُ المكذبين. إن تحرص على هداهم فإن الله لا يهدي من يضل وما لهم من ناصرين. وأقسموا بالله جهد أيمانهم لا يبعث الله من يموت بلى وعدا عليه حقا ولكن أكثر الناس لا يعلمون بلى وعدا عليه حقا ولكن أكثر الناس لا يعلمون صدق الله العلي العظيم.
In the name of God, the most gracious, the most compassionate. And certainly we raise in every nation an apostle, saying, serve Allah and shun the Satan. So there were some of them who Allah guided, and there were others against whom error was due. Therefore travel in the land, then see what was the end of the rejecters. If you desire further guidance, yet surely Allah does not guide him who leads astray, nor shall they have any helpers. And they swear by Allah with the most energetic of their oath, Allah will not raise up him who dies. Yeah, is a promise binding on him quite true, but most people do not know.
This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.
Palestinians warn that Israel's plan to hold the so-called flag march in Al-Quds can lead to an explosion in the situation across the occupied territory. Ukraine's military says its forces have made new advances near the eastern city of Bakhmut in heavy fighting with Russian troops. And thousands of people take to the streets of Argentina's capital, Buenos Aires, to protest against the government measures to handle high inflation rates. Our top story for this half hour, a spokesman for the Palestinian presidency warns that Israel's insistence on holding the so-called flag march will raise tensions in the occupied territories. Nabil Abu Radina said, the provocative march, which is planned for Thursday, will ignite the region and its consequences will be dire. The spokesman added that Israel would be fully responsible for any escalation resulting from the march. Abu Radina noted that the occupied city of Al-Quds will remain the eternal capital of the state of Palestine. The Palestinian Hamas resistance movement also denounced the march as a failed attempt by Israel to implement its racist Judaization plans. The flag march marks Israel's occupation of the West Bank and East Al-Quds in 1967. The annual march is organized by far-right Israeli settlers at the Al-Aqsa Mosque compound. Our correspondent, Mona Candila, is joining us now from Ramallah with updates on the attempts by the Israelis to conduct this so-called flag march. Mona, what details do you have to share with us?
First of all, the Israeli regime decided to deploy 3,000 Israeli police officers inside the old town of Al-Quds and around the Al-Aqsa Mosque. And also during the flag march, where thousands of Jewish settlers are expected to take part in the flag march in the afternoon hours. However, this flag march starts its activities in the early hours of Thursday, with hundreds of Jewish settlers have raided the Al-Aqsa Mosque complex under protection from hundreds of Israeli, forces. At this time, Israeli forces raided first the Al-Aqsa Mosque and its complex and took out and forced out the Palestinian worshippers. And they also prevented the Palestinian worshippers and the Muslim worshippers to perform the Fajr prayers. And then they forced out all the worshippers who were inside the complex in order to make sure it's empty to allow the hundreds of Jewish settlers to raid the Al-Aqsa Mosque complex. This is in the early hours of Thursday. It's expected, of course, that there would be another raids. These are known by the Jewish settlers as normal visits, where also hundreds of settlers are expected to raid the Al-Aqsa Mosque complex, including those who were with the Israeli settlers. There was the development of the Negev and Galilee, and National Minister Yitzhak Wasserlof joined the head of the, they called it the Temple Mount, while the Palestinians and the Muslims know that it's Al-Aqsa Mosque complex and the Ha'at al-Buraq, al-Buraq Wall. The Israelis call it as the Western Wall and the Temple Mount. However, up till the moment, Palestinians and even world states have warned the Israeli regime in order to prevent this parade or this march to enter the Muslim quarter of the old city during the flag march. The Hamas movement, Jihad movement, and other Palestinian resistance groups have warned the Israeli regime not to allow the settlers to walk through the streets of the Muslim quarter of the of Al-Quds. So we have to wait whether the route of the flag march would remain the same, or they will only allow the settlers to walk through the Jewish or the Israeli streets and not the Muslim quarter of the Al-Quds, of the old town of Al-Quds, of course.
All right, Mona, we're going to be hearing from you later on in the day with more updates on the situation in the occupied Palestinian territories. That was our correspondent, Mona Kandil, joining us from Ramallah. Well, Palestinian officials say the latest Israeli aggression against the Gaza Strip displaced more than 450 families, consisting of over 2,500 people. The Coastal Territories Ministry of Social Development said displaced Gazans included more than 1,000 children and nearly 700 women. It added that more than 64% of Gaza's population suffers from food insecurity, while the poverty rate stands at 60% as a result of Israel's brutal siege. The ministry also condemned the international silence towards Israel's crimes against children in Gaza, who were direct targets of the regime's aggression. Israel attacked Gaza for 5 days beginning on May 9th. The onslaught claimed more than 30 lives, women and children included. And Iran has slammed a statement from G7 finance ministers after their meeting in Japan, which accused Tehran of illicit financial activities. Iran's foreign ministry spokesman Nasser Kanani called the accusations baseless and delusional. He said G7 countries should end their support for U.S.'s unilateral and illegal sanctions against Iran rather than using outdated methods to coerce international bodies to their will. The finance ministers of seven developed countries met in the Japanese city of Niigata ahead of a leaders' summit in Hiroshima. The final statement of the three-day meeting also accused North Korea and Russia of illicit financial activities. Well, in Britain, a large protest movement of Orthodox religious Jews have been sparked over fears that the government intends to force controversial relationship and same-gender lifestyle lessons onto unregistered Jewish faith schools. The Jewish religion, similar to Islam and Christianity, doesn't permit relations outside of marriage and gender-mixing concepts. Despite this, the U.S. mandates lessons on these subjects, including on regulated religious schools. The dispute has led to several protests, which now sees British Jews branding the government anti-Semitic. Robert Carter reports.
Hundreds of Orthodox Jews protested outside the UK Parliament building on Tuesday over fears the establishment will begin regulating traditional Jewish faith schools known as yeshivot. Protest leaders made clear they considered any legislation targeting unregulated Jewish religious institutions as anti-Semitic, and they may be forced to flee Britain to protect their religious freedoms from unwelcome reforms.
Today, we face a concerning challenge as politicians attempt to push through a proposed register for children educated outside of school. This is no ordinary bill, but one that seeks to sneak in new laws through the back door under the guise of a private member's bill. This register proposal targets our strictly Orthodox Jewish community, intending to undermine our way of life more than any other group. It reeks of state-sponsored anti-Semitism.
What concerns these religious Jewish parents is regulated British education mandates lessons on lifestyles which contradict Jewish religious beliefs, including relationship and sex education, or RSE, LGBT propaganda, and other anti-religious ideologies, including atheism.
Well, we're not talking about murdering anybody. We're just talking about what we don't want our children to be taught. And we're just following what it says in our religion. And it's absolutely disgraceful that you're not allowed to do that in this country. And that's anti-Semitic.
These protests come after years of public anger expressed by parents, particularly British Muslims, over RSE lessons already being implemented in state schools. Opt-out options are not available, and accusations of indoctrination or anti-religious propaganda being fed to young children has been rife. In January 2023, a petition went viral, gaining over 200,000 signatures, demanding the government remove LGBT teaching from the controversial curriculum. The government responded, saying,
"The statutory guidance states that all pupils should receive teaching on LGBT content during their school years. Secondary schools should include LGBT content in their teaching. Primary schools are strongly encouraged and enabled when teaching about different types of family to include families with same-sex parents."
The ruling Conservative government has routinely attacked left-wing opposition over their support for the Palestinian cause and their criticism of Britain's relationship with the Israeli regime. However, and quite ironically, it's now number 10 that finds itself on the receiving end of not only accusations of anti-Semitism, but also Islamophobia and for being anti-religion in general, over an education system which is perceived to be discriminating against religious minority rights. Robert Carter, London.
Well, Ukraine has issued air raid alerts across the country as Russian strikes rock the capital, Kiev, and other regions again. The Ukrainian military has reported several explosions in the capital, with air raids triggering two fires in the city's eastern districts. No casualties have been reported in Kiev, but officials say one person was killed and two others wounded after a missile hit an industrial facility in the port city of Odessa. The military says there were cruise missile attacks in the central Vinnytsia region as well. New aerial strikes have prompted authorities to issue alerts in northern, southern, and western regions. Residents have been told to remain in shelters. Kiev's civil and military administration say the recent attacks were unprecedented in their power, intensity, and variety. Ukraine's military says it has made new advances near the eastern city of Bakhmut in heavy fighting with Russian forces there. Ukraine's military spokesperson said the country's forces have successfully conducted a defensive operation penetrating up to 500 meters in some parts. The official, however, noted that Russian forces are seeking to take over the city at will, striking Ukrainians with all systems and calibers. He added that Russia is moving new units to Bakhmut in an attempt to achieve some kind of intermediate success. Bakhmut has been the focal point of fighting between Russia and Ukraine for about 10 months now. The city is seen by Moscow as a stepping stone towards capturing the rest of the eastern industrial region of Donbass, which borders Russia. China says it has agreed with Ukraine to continue their mutual respect and keep mutually beneficial cooperation moving forward. The Chinese Foreign Ministry issued a statement after the country's special envoy for Eurasian affairs, Li Hui, paid a visit to Ukraine. The statement said China has always played a constructive role in alleviating the humanitarian situation in Ukraine and will continue to provide assistance within its capacity. Li was the highest-ranking Chinese diplomat to visit Ukraine since the beginning of the Russian military operation there. During the trip, Li met with President Volodymyr Zelensky and other Ukrainian officials. The Chinese envoy's visit was part of a European tour to promote Beijing-led negotiations to resolve the Ukraine conflict. This just in, Iran's President Ebrahim Raisi has called on Afghan officials to supply Iran water share from the Hirmand River. We're going to give you updates on that as we figure out more. French President Emmanuel Macron has reached record lows in popularity after cutting unions out of their traditional role in the lawmaking process. Unions finally met with the government regarding the recent 2-year hike in the pension age, but only nearly a month after the age hike went into law by executive order. Rami Mazouri has more from Paris.
For the first time since massive regular protests began in January, the French government has held discussions with union leaders regarding a 2-year hike to the retirement age. A notable problem with that long delay is that the age hike has already been forced into law via a decree by President Emmanuel Macron. Public opinion is overwhelmingly against the change, but the government is standing firm, even though anger is rising to threatening levels nationwide. The First Lady's nephew was recently beaten by protesters over the age hike. Over 60% of the country wants the Prime Minister fired, and neither Macron nor his ministers can appear in public without protesters noisily banging casserole pans.
There's enormous anger right now. Macron has destroyed our social services, given huge tax gifts to the rich, persecuted and jailed protesters while allowing the far right to demonstrate without barely any police presence. And this is not even a complete list. People just want to live normally. But the Macron era is one of sadness and poverty.
Unions say the country will not get back to normal unless the age hike is revoked. But France has seen massive anti-government unrest regularly for well over a decade, and usually over far-right austerity measures. France and the European Union continue to be hounded by accusations that they are anti-democratic, and the latest of many French presidential decrees has only further increased dissatisfaction and dissent.
There is growing realization that our major national policies are decided in Brussels, and that our president is a mere puppet. We're also subservient to Washington. Simply look at what we're doing in Ukraine for more proof. So there's no hope that we'll have democracy during the last 4 years of Macron's term. But if we don't get it in 2027, things will explode.
Union leaders left the closed-door meeting, calling it not useful and a one-way monologue. The pension age hike has overshadowed other crises, such as record inflation, the arming of the unrest in Ukraine, and stagnant wages. But all of those remain unresolved flashpoints as well. Barring a surprise reversal from the government, unions are planning a 14th day of nationwide strikes next month. Ramin Mazahiri, Paris.
Well, this just in, more elaborations on the breaking news we had earlier. According to the Iranian President Ebrahim Raisi, Afghan officials must supply Iran water share from the Hirmand River based on bilateral agreements. We'll be focusing on that story and much more as we get more details. Elsewhere, thousands of Argentinians have poured onto the streets of the capital, Buenos Aires, to protest against the government's measures to handle high inflation rates. Protesters gathered in front of the government house to demand better wages and jobs. People are angry over skyrocketing prices that have gone into triple digits as the country grapples with an inflation rate of over 100%. Nearly 40% of Argentinians live below the poverty line. The government has come up with austerity measures to comply with a deal with the International Monetary Fund that approved a $44 billion loan last year. The current situation raises fears of a return to hyperinflation that hit the country 30 years ago. That's a wrap for now. Bye, everybody. We'll be right back.
selection of Ayatollah Khamenei's viewpoints.
It guides us through life. It has taught us everything. We should learn and appreciate what it gives us. And try to apply them to our daily lives. How is it possible? By means of Quran.
این خوندن قرآن و تلاوت قرآن قدم اول است برادران من این قدم آخر نیست.
Reading and recitation of the Quran is the first step, brothers, not the last one.
هو الذي أرسل رسوله بالهدى ودين.
It is he who has sent his apostle with the guidance and the religion of truth, that he may make it prevail over all religions, though the polytheists should be averse.
والذي أرسل رسوله بالهدى ودين الحق ليظهره على الدين كله ولو كره المشركون.
تلاوت القرآن با صوت خوش، با آداب که شیوه خاصی دارد، موسیقی خاصی دارد، روش خاصی دارد، اینها چیزایی لازم است.
Recitation of the Quran in nice tones should be performed according to particular methods and tones.
اما این کافی نیست.
But it's not enough.
مشکل بزرگ مسلمانان دنیا دوری از قرآن. دوری از قرآن. از قرآن.
Muslims' major problem is losing touch with the Quran. Quran. Quran.
کتاب
The Supplication on Thursdays. In the name of Allah, the All-Merciful, the All-Compassionate. Praise belongs to Allah, who has taken away the shadowy night by His power and brought the sight-giving day through His mercy. He has clothed me in its brightness and given me its favor. O Allah, just as Thou hast spared me for this day, so also spare me for its likes. Bless the Prophet Muhammad and his household, and torment me not in it and in other nights and days by allowing me to commit unlawful acts and to clothe myself in sins. Provide me with its good, the good of all within it, and the good of everything after it, and turn away from me its evil, the evil of all within it, and the evil of everything after it. O Allah, by the protective compact of Islam, I seek mediation with Thee, and by the inviolability of the Quran, I rely upon Thee. By Muhammad, the Chosen, Allah bless him and his household, I seek intercession with thee, so recognize my protective compact, by which I hope my need will be granted. O most merciful of the merciful, O Allah, decree for me on Thursday five things, which none embraces but thy generosity, and none supports but thy favors. Health through which I may have the strength to obey thee. Worship by which I may deserve thy plentiful reward. Plenty in my state through lawful provision. And that thou makest me secure in the places of fear through thy security. And placest me in thy fortress against the striking of worries and sorrows. Bless Muhammad and his household. And make my seeking his mediation as an intercessor give profit on the day of resurrection. Surely, thou art the most merciful of the merciful.
A barrage of climate-fueled disasters in the U.S. has slowed down federal tax collection just when it's needed the most. The reports that a series of climate catastrophes have exacerbated the debt ceiling crisis in the United States. In this regard, we have taken a look at world media websites and news agencies for further details. Stay tuned for more. Truth out wrote in this regard, as President Joe Biden tangles with Republican lawmakers over whether to raise the nation's debt ceiling, a key question looms over the negotiations. When exactly will the U.S. government run out of money? No one knows the answer, but one factor is making it harder to pin down: climate change. A barrage of climate-fueled disasters has slowed down the pace of federal tax collection, pushing the government closer to an unprecedented default on its debt this summer. There are countless factors that determine how much tax revenue the federal government receives on any given day, but one major factor this year is climate change. The past year saw more than a dozen billion-dollar disasters in as many states, and the Internal Revenue Service has offered tax relief to residents of these states, giving them an extra few months to file their taxes. The worst affected states include Florida and California, which suffered respectively from Hurricane Ian and a series of atmospheric river storms this winter. Together, the two states account for more than a quarter of federal revenues. Because millions of American taxpayers have been able to delay their filings due to disasters, the federal government is receiving less money than it otherwise would at this time of year. In ordinary circumstances, this would not be a problem, since the government borrows money to make up for an uneven balance between tax revenue and spending, usually by issuing bonds. But because the U.S. has reached its self-imposed debt ceiling, an arbitrary limit on how much of that borrowing the government can do, the fate of the global economy depends on how much cash the Treasury receives over the next few weeks. This limit was established around a century ago, and Congress has raised it dozens of times, typically without controversy. But in recent years, Republicans have seized on debt ceiling authorization as high stakes way to extract concessions that they don't have the votes to pass through Congress. Since assuming control of the House of Representatives this year, Republicans have refused to endorse the customary debt ceiling increase unless Biden agrees to cuts in federal spending that have already been appropriated by Congress. Though the exact conditions that will satisfy enough Republicans to vote for an increase are unclear, a variety of controversial options are on the table, including a repeal of Inflation Reduction Act, the climate law intended to keep the U.S. in line with its Paris Agreement targets. The U.S. reached the current debt limit in January. Since then, the U.S. Treasury Department has been paying daily bills using only the cash it has on hand. If lawmakers don't raise the debt ceiling soon, the Treasury will run out of cash and have no choice but to default on its debt. This would have disastrous and unprecedented consequences. Veterans and Social Security recipients would miss payments, borrowing costs for credit cards and mortgages could jump, and global financial markets would enter a tailspin. Biden and House Speaker Kevin McCarthy met this week to discuss a debt ceiling increase. But a big problem for both sides is that no one knows for sure when the Treasury will run out of cash. Treasury officials have said that a default could arrive as early as June 1st, but the federal government is so large that it's impossible to predict how much money it will receive from taxes any given day. The best that officials can do is give a ballpark estimate of when the so-called X date of default will arrive. Federal disaster declarations have made that prediction even more difficult. The disaster declarations are playing a heightened role in determining the X date because they are shifting normal revenue patterns of the government and spreading them across the year, as opposed to truncating them into tax season, said Rachel Sinderman, a senior associate director for economic policy at the Bipartisan Policy Center, a nonprofit think tank that has been studying the debt ceiling timeline. Sinderman said this uncertainty wouldn't be a big deal, saying if lawmakers had started negotiating a debt limit increase earlier in the year. But with the X date now potentially just weeks away, the ups and downs of federal revenue collection have become extremely important. A few extra days of revenue could mean the difference between a safe resolution and a chaotic default. If the government can make it to June 15th without running out of money, it will receive a large chunk of cash from quarterly tax filings, which should stabilize revenue for a few weeks. Then, at the end of June, the Treasury will be able to access another $143 billion in borrowing authority, which could help stave off default until the beginning of August. But if May tax revenues remain lower than projected, the government will never reach that mid-June revenue influx at all. Without a debt limit increase, an X date is inevitable, but the revenue delays could push that date earlier and earlier, heightening the risk of default. John Ball, spokesperson for the Tax Policy Center, a nonpartisan think tank, said, "Shifting the breach date a few days one way or the other is important this close to finish the line. Though they are hardly the biggest factor in the debt ceiling crisis, this is why the disaster delays matter. By failing to raise the debt limit, Congress has made the government vulnerable to every little bump in tax revenue, and climate change has created quite a few bombs."
Choose to think better. Welcome to a better you. IRIB English Radio. Visit us at parstoday.ir/en.
Iranian culture and food.
Part 3.
Along with language, flag, religion, customs, traditions, and national arts, food and sofre are among the elements that define nations' identities. Food is a delicious part of culture of every nation and is a good measure to determine kindness, generosity, ethics, protection of environment and nature, and the type of its worldview. Iranian dishes have stories rooted in history. Many of today's dishes in the world were first made and cooked in this country. Iranian dishes have original and natural tastes. We use spices as much as necessary in food. Each culinary school has prominent aroma and flavor that is introduced with it. The fragrance of Iranian cuisine is made of saffron, cardamom, and rose water and a golden color. Iranian food has a mild taste. In cooking, we pay attention to the benefits and what is harmful in the ingredients. Everything must be in balance. Kermanshah pure animal oil, ambarbu, tarimi and Hashimi rice, lamb of Mughan, afshar and sangsari, Azerbaijan yogurt, desful citrus, dates of bam and bushehr, Khorasan wheat, and north and south fish, each have a special and unique taste. This documentary is a tribute to thousands of years of Iranian cooking. This work is about Iranian food. It is about people we don't know, but who are involved in our sustenance. This documentary is a tribute to the mothers of this land who taught their children the cooking traditions of Iran generation after generation so that this old and unique art remains eternal. This documentary is a tribute to our beloved country, Iran. Iran is a country full of wealth in so many ways, tens of generations before us, and we use the same Iranian dishes. And it is up to us to protect the sacred heritage. I'm Nusha Tabibi Gilani. I am interested in Iranian culture and food. After the invasion of Mahmud Hotak and the destruction of the Safavi dynasty, a turbulent period was imposed on Iran. The conflicts and rise of Nader Shah and the overthrow of Shah Tahmasib II and the rule of Karim Khan Zand brought short periods of balance and peace that were not very stable. In these periods, naturally, decorative arts and the construction of buildings and emirates were not considered and did not have a chance to grow. Agha Muhammad Khan, the ruler of the Qajar dynasty, established a new era for Iran by unifying the country and establishing regulations, stability, and security. In this period, the construction of buildings, state emirates, and decorative arts started again. Qajari special aesthetics gradually appeared. There is a mixture of delicate and detailed Safavid art and European-style paintings. The use of new colors and patterns signaled the beginning of another era in Iranian fine arts. Heyran in the Talish language means the place of cloud and fog. Gardan-e-Heyran is located in the west of Gilan province and near the Talish village of the same name on the road to Astara. The humidity that rises from the Caspian Sea reaches this 1,500-meter altitude. For this reason, Gardan-e-Heyran and the adjacent valley are always foggy. Ash Shole Yazdi is another type of ash that is cooked in our country. Ash Sholi is very important in the life of people in Yazd. It is not the main dish, but it is very common, especially when people gather together. It is made of a wonderful combination of vegetables and beetroots. I think it is super delicious and healthy. Tehran is a city that has been in a struggle between modernity and traditionalism for about two centuries. Like any other modern metropolitan, beauty and ugliness can be seen in this city. Following the procedure of accelerated and alien development, the beauty of the city has been replaced by ugliness. Tupkhane Square's original appearance was changed in a bad way and couldn't be recovered until this day. Tehran became the center of attention since the time of Shah Tahmasib I. He ordered the construction of fences and buildings in Tehran. Since then, Tehran has gradually attracted the attention of the people of other regions of Iran because it was famous for its wonderful climate and great fruits. Tehran began to expand irregularly at the end of the Qajar period. In addition, urban management organizations and new facilities were launched in Tehran, but the old way of city administration was still common. In the course of this irregular expansion, cultural and educational facilities, the new commercial and political centers were established in Tehran. Tehran became the center of attention, and this change came with crowdedness and chaos. Traffic and pollution in Tehran became unstoppable phenomena. These problems gradually became a part of the city's identity. More people were able to buy a private car with the increase in oil revenues. Congestion, crowdedness, and density of cars became immeasurable. A special architecture is used in such buildings to create a modern space for new offices. A mix of Islamic and ancient Iranian architecture is manifested in this work. The prominent designer of this building is Gabriel Gouvrekian. He is the founder of a new style in modern Iranian architecture. Other buildings of this period, such as the buildings of the Milli Bank, the Civil Registry, and Alborz High School, which were all newly established institutions in that period, followed almost the same architectural style. Today, Tehran suffers from traffic and air pollution. Natural gifts and historical monuments have made Tehran attractive and spectacular in terms of tourism. Life doesn't pause at any moment in Tehran. There are few people on the streets during a few hours at night, but these kinds of people would usually get out of their homes to go to work before sunrise. They work and prepare necessities for others. Bakeries and kahvehkhanes are open in darkness to prepare breakfast for people who go to work. Iranians' favorite meal for breakfast is ash. Many people eat ash qalamkar, shole mashadi, and ash sabzi shirazi that are prepared in the very early hours of the morning. Mr. Sultan Mohammadi has been working in this shop for 6 decades and cooks ash until dawn so that customers will come and eat their breakfast. This shop was established 87 years ago, and it shows he's been cooking ash since then. Ash shole qalamkar is a fantastic combination of legumes, wheat, lamb, and aromatic vegetables. When one eats this type of healthy ash, he won't feel hungry until lunchtime. Mr. Sultan Mohammadi is a kind man who has good memories from the old Tehran and Sarcheshme. He is among the old shopkeepers who adhere to certain moral principles. Their honesty has caused their business to be active for more than 8 decades. Ferdows Garden in Tehran was built by Hossein Ali Muayyer al-Mamalek, the finance minister of Mohammad Shah Qajar. Mohammad Shah Qajar used to stay in the Mohammadiya castle during the warm months of the year, and in order to be near the king, the minister bought some pieces of land from the people of that area and built the Ferdows Garden. Mohammad Shah Qajar died at the age of 44 in Mohammadiya Castle, and from then on, the Qajar family considered that castle as a cursed zone. But Muayyer family didn't stop the construction in the castle and built many buildings in that garden. Late Hossein Ali Muayyer al-Mamalek used to take all kinds of seeds and fruits and vegetables with him in his trips to Western countries. Once he brought the seed of tomatoes and planted that in the garden, and when the tomatoes were ready, the family members couldn't recognize them and thought that they were poisonous. One day, Malikzadeh Izzatudullah, who visited her family members in the garden, saw the tomatoes and told her relatives that they were very delicious and were not poisonous at all. They picked some tomatoes and put them in the sofre. People in the garden didn't dare eat the tomatoes before Malikzadeh Izzatudullah. And since then, tomatoes came to the Iranian kitchen as if we've been using them for thousands of years. Therefore, tomatoes were grown for the first time in Tehran and in Ferdows garden and used in sofre. Potatoes, like tomatoes, first reached Iranians in Tehran. The potato is a word-for-word translation of the name that the French give to this food. In the south, according to the Hindus, potatoes were called plums. Potatoes are a gift from John Malcolm to the royal court, Fath Ali Shah. When John Malcolm came from India to the royal court of Tehran as an emissary of the British and East India Company, he brought with him various gifts, one of which was the potato. By the order of the king, potatoes were cultivated in Pashand, and then they were used in food. In a short period of time, potatoes became popular like tomatoes. They have become so popular in Iranian cuisine that their non-native origins have been completely forgotten. Potatoes and tomatoes, which were once unknown to people, are used in cooking our most popular Iranian food. The taste of Iranian cooks recognize that adding potatoes and tomatoes to abgusht makes it more delicious. When cooks want to prepare abgusht, they add tomatoes and potatoes as well. In the morning, the cook measures the ingredients of dizi and adds meat too. When these ingredients are half cooked, they add the potatoes. In the final step, they pour tomato paste that adds color and flavor to the meat. Dizi is a plate of abgusht which derives from the old Persian word diz. Diz means kneading clay. These dishes were made of clay, and that's why they called them dizi. They started to use dizi instead of abgusht in recent years. Abgusht is the national dish of Iranians and has 1,000 historical stories. This dish has been cooked in different forms for centuries, and all Iranians love it. Abgusht is one of the most original dishes. There's a special way of eating abgusht, and just Iranians know about it. If you go to the north, the south, east, or west of the Iran, all kinds of this popular and simple food are cooked and eaten. In the past, people used to cook abgusht with parts of bread, fat, and bones, and it was a simple and accessible food. In recent years, they use lamb muscle meat that is different from its old version. All Iranian ethnic groups have abgusht in their sofre. It has a common cooking method in the country. We can talk hours and hours about abgusht. Abgusht is an Iranian national food and has 1,000 historical stories. This food has been cooked in different forms for centuries, and all Iranians love it. COVID-19 pandemic didn't let us prepare a great documentary about Avgusht and its important role in the history and cultural unity of Iranian people. Please consider this short description as an introduction so that I can present you with a more appropriate program on another occasion. May Allah bless you and goodbye.
In the limelight.
U.S. officials are still preparing for a big surge in the number of migrants crossing into the United States from the southern border with Mexico. We take a look at the U.S. media's coverage of this story. Please stay with us. National broadcaster CBS News has covered this story and tells us more. Pandemic-era limits on asylum, known as Title 42, have been rarely discussed among many of the tens of thousands of migrants massed on Mexico's border with the United States. Their eyes were and are fixed instead on a new U.S. government mobile app that grants 1,000 people daily an appointment to cross the border and seek asylum while living in the United States. With demand far outstripping available slots, the app has been an exercise in frustration for many, and a test of the Biden administration's strategy of coupling new legal paths to entry with severe consequences for those who don't. You start to give up hope, but that's the only way, said Teresa Munoz, a 48-year-old who abandoned her home in the Mexican state of Michoacan, after a gang killed her husband and beat her. She has been trying for a month to gain entry through the app called CBP1, while staying in a Tijuana shelter with her two children and two-year-old grandson. Manuel Sanchez, a 40-year-old, told CBS News that he's been trying and failing to secure an immigration appointment on CBP1. He said he and other Venezuelan migrants might head back if they can't get appointments. U.S. Homeland Security Secretary Alejandro Mayorkas said the Border Patrol made 6,300 arrests on Friday, 12th of May, the first day after Title 42 expired, and 4,200 arrests on Saturday, 13th of May. That's sharply below the 10,000-plus on 3 days last week, as migrants rushed to get in before new policies to restrict asylum took effect. It's still early, Mayorkas said on Sunday on CNN's State of the Union program. We're in day three, but we have been planning for this transition for months and months, and we have been executing on our plan, and we will continue to do so. Despite the drop in recent days, authorities predict arrests will spike to between 12,000 and 14,000 a day. Matthew Hudak, Deputy Border Patrol Chief, said in a court filing on Friday. And authorities cannot confidently estimate how many will cross, Hudak said, noting intelligence reports failed to quickly flag a singular surge of 18,000, predominantly Haitian migrants in Del Rio, Texas, in September of 2021. More than 27,000 migrants were in custody along the border one day last week, a number that may top 45,000 by the end of May, if authorities can't release migrants without orders to appear in immigration court, Budak said. The Biden administration plans to ask an appeals court on Monday for permission to release migrants without orders to appear in court. Authorities say it takes between 90 minutes and 2 hours to process a single adult for court appearance, potentially choking Border Patrol holding facilities, and longer to process families. By contrast, it only takes about 20 minutes to release someone with instructions to report to an immigration office in 60 days, a common practice since 2021 to ease overcrowding along the southern border with Mexico. The Justice Department even raised the possibility of declining to take people into custody if it can't quickly release migrants, calling that a worst-case